Hello and welcome to the Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. It is Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the next hour. A big thanks to Sinead for keeping us all company since 2 o'clock this afternoon. I have got a fabulous show coming up for you, including an interview with Olympian Phil Healy, some American football and GAA coverage from Ger McCarthy, to name but a few. Let's get into it. Starting with Gaelic Games, where there were four games down for decision today in the McCarthy Insurance's Senior A Football Championships. Kanturk prevailed against O'Donovan Rossa with the final score in that game, Kanturk 3-16 to O'Donovan Rossa 8 points. Meanwhile, Kishkeam suffered a 6-10 loss against Carrigaline. Elsewhere, Knocknagree ran out a huge win against Clyde Rovers. The final scoreline was Knocknagree 5-17 to Clyde Rovers 13 points. And finally, Kilnamartyr were single point winners in their clash with Bailagh and Gaeltacht. Staying with Gaelic Games, there were two matches in the Ladies Football Senior Championship this afternoon. St. Val's earned a convincing win against Castlehaven on a scoreline of 2-15 to 1-9. In contrast, it was a close run affair between Éire Óg and Ahada. The final score in that game was Ahada 12 points to Éire Óg 2 goals and 5 points. To football now, where action continues today in the opening weekend of the 2024-25 Premier League season. First up, in the London Derby between Brentford and Crystal Palace, it finished 2-1 in favour of Brentford. Guy Swindles has the full-time report.
Brentford 2, Crystal Palace 1. Thoroughly entertaining London derby. Palace will wonder how they lost. Not entirely sure they deserved to win, but they bossed this game for many of the minutes involved. As it was, Mbeumo gave Brentford the lead in the 29th minute against the run of play. Palace then equalised an unfortunate Pinnock own goal, getting them level. They then took over until on the break, suddenly Wisser was there to bundle the ball home, and Palace just couldn't come again. Eze tried, but couldn't quite beat the keeper. Brentford 2, Crystal Palace 1.
Chelsea and Manchester City are currently in action at Stamford Bridge, where the score is 1-0 to City with just coming up on 72 minutes played. Meanwhile, earlier today in the Championship, Sunderland ran out 4-0 winners against Sheffield Wednesday. There was one game in the Scottish League Cup which saw Celtic face Hibernian. It finished 3-1 in Celtic's favour, booking them a place in the Cup quarterfinals. And finally, here at home in the FAI Cup, Kerry have gone to extra time in against Bohemians after the two sides finished with 2 goals apiece in normal time. I'm going to start off with local Gaelic games. Ger McCarthy was pitch side from the McCarthy Insurance's Group Premier IFC Group 2 game between Bandon and Bantry Blues today. The final score was Bandon 12 points to Bantry Blues 1 goal and 15 points. And we're going to hear first from Rory Dean and then David O'Donovan, both from the Bantry Blues camp.
Rory Dean, congratulations. Second consecutive win for Bantry into the knockout stages, but that was a really tough test today from Bandon.
Yeah, job done, as you say, but like loads to improve on at the same time. Good Bandon side, like they came out and played free-flowing football. I suppose they knew they had to win the game as well. Playing with the wind in the first half put us under pressure. Like, we know they're a good team. We've been battling against them a few years back, like, and we know what they have. So, look, we respected them. They respected us. Good game of football all round.
Arthur's goal was crucial. He'd missed a couple of chances, like, but you just kept going. That's positive too from your point of view.
Yeah, I suppose. I don't know the stats, but like I'd say we had about 7 or 8 goal chances, only took one. So look, we have loads to work on with regards to our efficiency in front of goal. But like, look, Bandon missed their chances as well, and at one stage I suppose they kind of probably feel themselves they might have kind of kicked it away when they were putting us under pressure. So look, commiserations to them, but look, we're just happy to be moving on.
How much do the experiences of the past 2 years of getting to the business end of the championship help the younger players in this panel?
I suppose we came from a place as a group, the older group of the players, that we were relegated down, like, so I suppose we've built a bit of momentum over the last 2 years, and there's a small bit of belief building, but like, look, ultimately there's hurt in the group as well. We've lost the last two finals in a row, so like, what do you want? You want to be in the quarter final, semi final stage if you can, but look, we don't take for granted it wasn't like that all the time either. So like, fellas are working very hard in training. A few lads injured today, other fellas stepped up and stepped into their place, which is great to see.
It's not a case of looking at the final, is it a case of one match at a time, same known 3 weeks time?
Look, if we lost today, like with the draws that were yesterday, you'd know what way you'd end up. Like, you'd be under savage pressure in the last game, so we're taking it one step at a time. But obviously, look, you want to be in the business end of the championship, no different than Bandon. So like, every team is playing for what's at stake, and look, we're just happy to be in the quarter final at least. But like, we still have Naver Bawn to look at. They'll be a tough test the next day, and based on the Nemo results, they won't be guaranteed anything either, so it'll be a good battle again.
And just finally, good to see you injury free, flying up and down the pitch, enjoying it.
Look, it's great. Look, it's nice to be back with the club after a big year with Cork again. But like, look, ultimately you owe an awful lot to your club, so it's nice to see Bantry getting the win again today.
Well done.
Thanks a million.
Congratulations, first of all, David. In very, very hard-earned victory. Does that make it all the sweeter that you were really tested and pushed to the limit today?
Yeah, look, I suppose it was going to be local derby. No one was going to be giving us anything soft today, and that's to be expected. Look, a lot of those Bandon lads are pro players. You know, I would have dealt with them before, and you know, they brought it big time there for 3/4 an hour, and you know, I suppose, you know, probably lad, the experience we've garnered over the last few years showed coming down the stretch there. You know, we didn't panic. You know, we missed 4 or 5 goal chances, but you know, they stayed. You know, I wouldn't say sticking to the process, because that sounds a bit robotic, but like, you know, they kept attacking the match rather than sitting back on the lead. They just kept attacking, and you know, if it had gone on another 5 minutes, you know, we could have tagged on a few more. Like,
yeah, the consistency of your performance, especially the first out in a shootout against Nemo in a tight derby today, that must give you still things to work on, but still please you.
Yeah, but look, you don't know what different scenarios you're going to come up against. Everybody wants to play different styles, etc. So you just have to deal what's in front of you on the day. And you know, look, but you know, they're a young team. But like I said earlier, they've a lot of experience garnered going to the park the last couple of years, and you know, we're trying to learn the lessons and you know, and put into practice on match day.
And just finally, like, one group game to go now, and you're at top of the table. That's where you would have wanted to be. But is it more the same in the build up to it now? You just do the same, repeat the same process?
Yeah, sure. Look, we've 4 or 5 lads that are missing there today. Like, we didn't use any sub because of the juniors, unless we had to. So like, 5 of them would have been big part the last few years. So you know, we've a month to you know, to circle the wagons now and get everyone back together, hopefully.
Congratulations, well done.
Okay, thanks, sure.
Okay, we're switching from Gaelic football to American football now, because there is a big game coming to our shores next weekend. It's the Aer Lingus College Classic, which will be happening at the Aviva Stadium. And earlier this week, I got the chance to speak with Alan Namasny, who is head coach of the Cork Admirals American football team and also of the Irish under-19 American football team, who are known as the Wolfhounds. And Alan told me a bit about the history of the Aer Lingus College Classic, the calibre of the teams taking part, and also how his Wolfhounds team are going to be involved in the weekend's action, and lots more besides. So let's take a listen to that now. I'm delighted to be joined now on the Big Red Bench by Alan Namasny, coach of the Cork Admiral and also of the Irish under-19 American football team. Alan, it's great to have you on the show. How are you?
I'm good, Sarah. Thanks for having me on.
There's a very exciting weekend coming up on the 23rd and 24th of August with the Aer Lingus College Classic at the Aviva Stadium, which is on the Saturday, the 24th. Georgia Tech and Florida State are going to be facing off in that game. And for folks that maybe have never heard of the Aer Lingus College Classic, can you tell us a bit more about it?
Yeah, sure. It's actually going on in Ireland now since the late 80s. I think it was 1988 was the first one. And basically what it is there's two college teams. So in America, there's kind of 3 levels. There's high school, college, and then there's the NFL. And college football probably is, you know, one of the bigger sports in America from a volume of people level. So two teams from there to come over and play in Ireland is a huge deal, especially when you're bringing in teams like Georgia Tech and Florida State, who would regularly have, you know, 80, 90, 100,000 people at their games at home every time they play. So yeah, you know, to get teams like that travelling over, it's a big event. They'll have bands, they'll have staff, they'll have, you know, the volume of people that will, just from the teams alone that come in, is huge.
Absolutely. I was going to say that as well, because often with international, or I suppose exhibition games, sometimes particularly with, I'm thinking of the major league teams, for example, they'll send over teams that are kind of on the lower end, say, of the league tables. But as you mentioned there, both Georgia Tech and Florida State have huge football schools with really long histories. So they're right up there. What does that mean, you know, that for the American football community here in Ireland, particularly the Irish players, to get exposure to that level of football?
Yeah, I mean, you know, when you're talking about teams of those quality, I mean, it's just another level. They're obviously all, you know, the players aren't such professional, but obviously all the staff, all the running of it is. I mean, these are players that at that level, their main goal for their next step is to get into play professional football in the NFL. For them to come over here and for us to get exposure to that, I mean, you know, for the last few years, American Football Ireland have been, you know, working in conjunction with the College Classic to have our coaches in the Irish League to spend some time with their coaches before the game. So we had it with Northwestern there a few years ago. The same last year with Navy, and this year I actually met with Coach Mike Norvell from FSU there a couple of months ago, and they are trying to organise something so that we can get our coaches to go to their practice to learn from their coaches and then take that back into our clubs and our domestic league, which is obviously going to, you know, help improve the level of football that's available in Ireland.
Yeah, that's brilliant as well, that it's applied to the coaching staff, not just the players. It's great that you're getting that kind of all-round experience. I suppose getting more into the game itself, what are you expecting from these two teams at the end of the day? It's a bit different for them, you know, travelling this far for a game.
It is. So this is classified as week zero for them. So they'll go back to their kind of week one game. So this it's not a preseason game, but you know, it's for them to try and iron out all the little wrinkles and kinks that they'd have had over, you know, over the training camp and stuff like that. So FSU are the ACC champions, so they were in the college football playoffs last year. So they're one of the up and coming teams. Georgia Tech, probably a bit behind them, have improved massively over the last year. I think realistically, Georgia Tech certainly could win it, but I think, you know, the majority of people expect FSU to be able to continue what they were building on last year and take the next step and aim for a national championship in college football. So I think it's going to be a good game. I think the run game from Georgia Tech has come on immensely. If they can run the ball on FSU and make FSU have a new quarterback this year, who's not quite as good as the one they had last year. So if they can make him have to throw the ball to win, it could be very close. If Georgia Tech can't stop FSU's offense, then it could be a long day for Georgia Tech.
Brilliant. Lots to look forward to anyway in the game for sure. And there's extra excitement for you because, as I mentioned earlier, you're coach of the Irish under-19 American football team as well as the Cork Admirals, and you're going to be playing your Team GB counterparts the night before in the Energia Stadium. There's three games happening as part of that within the Global Ireland Football Tour. Tell me more about that, as I suppose it's been something that's an addition to the game itself, that's kind of looking at targeting maybe even younger players.
It is, yeah. I mean, look, this is another, again, it's a fantastic thing for us to have in Ireland. So the Global Irish Football Tournament is set up by Patrick Steinberg. He's part of the Global Football Company, and this has gone on again with a good few years. So basically what they do is they bring over high school teams. The high school teams play each other in this tournament, and then, you know, the high school game, as they're here, then they get to go to the college game, and it's like a big package for them. So last year we started the under-19s Irish Wolfhounds program, and our first ever game was actually in Gift last year against the high school community school of Naples, Florida. So that was a big thing for us, obviously, to be part of the tournament, having been there and watching it previously myself. To be on the sidelines was a great experience, and you know, it was fantastic for our players, because most of our guys are coming from either youth football, or they're just in their first year of senior football with us. So we had a lot of kids that you know, from 15 to 19, that had never actually really played football, and they're going into this as their first real game as such. So it was a huge experience for them. There was plenty of Cork involvement last year. There's a lot of Cork players again this year. We have guys from all over the country involved in the Irish Wolfhounds team, from Cork, Belfast, Donegal, Dublin, Kildare. It literally covers the country. And this year we're up against the GB under-19 team, who were in European competition up to last year. So obviously a very experienced setup. This will be our third ever game, so obviously it's quite a challenge for us to go up against a more experienced GB team. But you know, look, the lads have been training hard there, you know, the last few months, and you know, look, we're looking forward to a good solid game, and hopefully we're gonna be looking to get the win against them.
Definitely, I'd be interested to know what you've seen as the game continues to grow here. Especially, I guess, at that more underage level, you've obviously got people like Rhys Zammit, Charlie Smith, going over through the international pathway now to the NFL. Are these younger players starting to view that as a realistic route, or are we still kind of a little bit further away from that yet?
No, I think it's certainly becoming, in the last 2 years, it has become quite a viable option, for the simple reason that a lot of the NFL teams are now taking a big interest in Ireland. At the moment, we have three NFL teams that have the global marketing rights to Ireland. So we've got the Pittsburgh Steelers, the Jacksonville Jaguars, and the New York Jets. I ran with two camps with the Pittsburgh Steelers there in June, one in Belfast and one in Cork. So we had kids from 9 to 14, and then the other group was 15 to 18-year-olds. So we had I think it was 69 kids in the Cork camp, and we'd 77 in the Belfast camp. So, you know, we're getting kids in that, you know, are interested in the NFL. The NFL has become hugely popular in the last few years, especially with the access to social media. And, you know, you're not just kind of looking for a program once or twice a week on the TV. You know, everything is accessible, and Game Pass and all that. So there's an awful lot of kids getting into it. The Jacksonville Jaguars have put on a couple of camps this year as well. Again, aimed at younger kids. So from 9 to 18 is what they're kind of looking for. And what they want to see is they want to get, in the next couple of years, they want to get those kids to a level where they may be able to go on and go to college in the States and play college football. And then going back to Charlie there, I mean, that's the international player program. And, you know, the NFL teams are looking outside of America now for people that can play football. They want to get more international people involved. I mean, this time last year, Charlie was, you know, he wasn't even really thinking about football.
Yeah.
The other night he kicked the winning field goal.
Yeah.
You know, in a preseason game. So it's certainly a viable option for kids. What we're trying to do is we're trying to encourage them to come in, play domestic football, get involved with American football teams in Ireland, get to learn the sport first, and then, you know, through our connections with the NFL teams, to get them into these programs, to say either they go to the NFL Academy or go to college in the States. We've had a few of our guys from the under-19s have gone on now to go to college in the States. And again, it's all, you know, it's just starting now, but I think in the next 4 or 5 years, it's going to be huge, and we're going to have definitely a pathway for kids to go, I want to play American football. Here's the direction I can go to get to, you know, college level and hopefully NFL level.
Absolutely. And I suppose, as with anything, if you can see it, you can be it, you know. So if they have these examples of people now, especially from their own country, maybe even their own county, then it seems suddenly much more attainable and much less, I suppose, what the NFL is from the outside a lot of the time, which is this huge organization that is just, it almost seems untouchable. Whereas if you can say, no, actually, I know this guy, or I recognize this guy from kind of local things, it definitely must make it a lot more accessible, which is really exciting for younger people, as you said.
Yeah, it does, because, again, it's not just I see it on TV, but I don't get close to it. Like, for example, when Pittsburgh did the Camp in Cork, they brought over two current roster players.
Brilliant.
One of those guys scored a touchdown the other night in the preseason game.
Nice.
The Jaguars brought over a pro bowler. They also brought over the leading tackler of the NFL last year.
Wow.
Plus they brought over their special teams coach. So these are all people that the kids met, got pictures taken with, got to talk, and now they get to see him on playing games on TV. So when once you get, you know, as you said, it's kind of like now I can touch it and see it close to me, and now I have that option of going, right, I want to go play American football. Let's join it. Let's get going. And you know, and again, you get the chance to play for your county. You get the chance to play for your country. And on top of that, then obviously, you know, if you're good enough to go to college or the NFL, then. So I think it's in the next 4 to 5 years, I think it's going to be a huge increase in the volume of players here that have opportunities to go on to the next level.
Brilliant. And I suppose lastly, definitely want to mention the Cork Admirals specifically. Let us know what you've got coming up with the team, and also maybe where people can go if they did want more information, if they're curious.
Absolutely, yeah. So obviously, I'm the head coach of the Cork Admirals. We're the only kitted Cork American football team. Have been in existence since 2002. At the moment, we're just starting our training for our youth team. So our youth team is from 15 to 18-year-olds. Their season is starting on the 15th of September. The senior squad, which is 18+, their season finished a couple of weeks ago. So we'll be back in pre-season training with them in late October once the youth season is finished. And then the senior season then will kick off again kind of February next year. So usually seniors come in just for Christmas. We get the rookies in and then we come back. Everybody starts training back in January then for kickoff in March. Or late February, March. And as I said, the U team then will play their season from September to early November. So we are trying to kind of cover both kitted angles. We also now have a flag football team. So the flag football team are starting training as well at the moment. Their season will again start in September and run on from there. So we have options for all ages and levels, and contact and non-contact. So our social media, you know, Cork Admirals on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter, you know, anyone is interested, just message us and we'll get back to you. And, you know, it's a great sport to get into, again, as I said, because now there are the opportunities to take it to the next level. And, you know, we're looking forward to progressing that with the Admirals again. As I said, now that we have the connection with the Pittsburgh Steelers here in Cork as well, having had them down in MTU for the camp in June, and they were very happy. They want to come back and do more camps. So again, it's about growing the sport here and getting more people involved.
Fantastic. Thanks so much, Alan, for joining me on the Big Red Bench, and very best of luck on the 23rd.
Thanks very much, Sarah. Thank you.
The Big Red Bench with Bord Gáis Energy.
The Foley here with you until 7 o'clock. I was hoping to bring you a full-time score and full-time report from that second Premier League game of the day with Chelsea hosting Man City, but it is still ongoing. There's just under 30 seconds left because they've added on 5 minutes extra time, but the score has changed, so it is now 2-0 to City. So it's looking like they are going to get their season off to a winning start. Their title defending season, it has to be said. Elsewhere, though, in that FAI Cup game between Kerry and Bohemians, there's still nothing separating the two teams. Even after extra time, it is 2-2 in that game. It's going to be an absolute fight to the end for that one. Now, there was some exciting news earlier this week that Cork local Adam Ida had confirmed his transfer signing from Norwich to Celtic after being on loan to the Scottish club during the second half of last season. During that loan, the 23-year-old scored 9 goals in 19 appearances for Celtic, and he has become, as of this week, one of the most expensive signings in Celtic's history, as his deal could be worth up to £9.5 million. Let's hear what Adam had to say at the press conference announcing his signing.
Why were you so keen to make this happen then?
No, look, when I came here the first time, the love and support I got from everyone was was amazing, and for me to feel that connection with everyone was really important to me. And then obviously, in terms of that connection I had with the fans and the staff and the players, it obviously helped me out on the pitch. So for me, I think to develop my career, and if I want to do the best in my career, this was the right club for me.
It felt, speaking to you, that you got hooked on the club quite quickly in those first couple of weeks. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time. What was it that really kind of lured you in?
I think it was so comfortable, me coming in the first time. You know, the lads welcoming me and speaking with Brendan, all the staff, the fans, how they treated me. It was almost as the easiest transition ever. You know, settled in quite quick, and obviously then playing the games, scoring goals, it was amazing, and I've always wanted that feeling. I probably didn't have that feeling at Norwich, which was unfortunate, but look, I'm at a great club now. It's where I wanted to be, and I'm just delighted to get going.
How did you find the summer, though? Because this move hasn't appeared to have been as straightforward, perhaps, as you would have liked it, or the club would necessarily have liked it.
To be fair, my summer was great. I had a lot of holidays, and look, I said to my agent, I don't really want anything to do that you do the work and you just let me know when it's done, and found out the other day that it's done, so I was happy with that. But look, I didn't really want to get hooked too much on it, and I'm just thankful to be here now.
Was it not tricky though, in the fact that, you know, you had the issue with Norwich, you got sort of left out at one stage, you obviously had to play for Norwich at the weekend when perhaps your mind was elsewhere?
Yeah, look, I think everyone knew where I wanted to be, but I was still contracted at Norwich, you know. I still wanted to be professional, and they knew the situation, you know. They was great with me. They asked me if I wanted to play the first league game, and it was my choice to play, you know. Norwich are a club that gave me everything. It's where I grew up, and I came there as a boy and left as a man. You know, I've got nothing but good things to say about Norwich. They've treated me great, and look, these things happen in football, and it's time to move on.
What were the circumstances around the missed flight? Is that something that was blown out of proportion a bit externally?
Probably. Look, it had nothing to do with me trying to leave. It was just a genuine mistake for myself, and I did apologise to Norwich for that, and they know I had nothing to do with trying to leave the club or trying to force a move. It was nothing to do with that, so it was my fault, and it got resolved pretty quick.
The club have obviously spent quite a sizeable fee to bring you back. Is there an added pressure that comes along with that, do you feel?
Not really, no. I'm here to play football, you know. It wasn't my choice of the fee. I'm coming here now. I want to score as many goals as I can, be really successful, and just crack on, you know. I don't think there's much pressure on me with the fee. Of, like I said, it's, I wasn't the one that asked for that. I'm here to play games and win football games.
Think of the 19 appearances you made in the second half of last season. 7 of them were starts. Is the aim now to try and hold down that starting place?
Oh, look, I said it before, I'm here to play games regardless of if I'm starting or if I'm coming off the bench. The mentality here in this group is unbelievable. You know, everyone wants to win. It doesn't matter who's playing, who's starting, everyone supports each other, and I'll be the exact same this season. It's not about how many games are going to start. For me, it's winning games and scoring goals.
You said ended the season on the highest of highs, of course. How do you look back on that cup final win this season?
It's unbelievable, you know. It's probably the greatest moments I've had in my career. It's quite hard to describe that feeling, you know. When you see the ball going in the back of the net, it was unbelievable. And look, now it was obviously done. Was a great time, but kind of have to put that past me now and focus on this season.
Chance to play Champions League football this season. How much did that help your decision to come back here?
Huge. I think every young boy and every footballer wants to play in the Champions League. It's the elite level of football, and for me now to have the opportunity is unbelievable, and I can't wait to get going.
What kind of experience are you looking for from it?
Look, obviously we're going to be playing against top teams, but I've played international football, I'm playing against in a top level already, so obviously it's a new challenge for me, but it's, I like a new challenge, and I'm looking forward to it.
How confident are you that you can score the type of important goals that you scored last season? How important is self-confidence when you come to a club of this size?
Yeah, I'm quite confident. look, the timing of the goals I scored last season was unbelievable, but for me, the main target is to score as many goals as I can, regardless of what time it is. Like you said, self-confidence is huge. I've said it previously, when I was at Norwich, I probably didn't have that belief and that drive to get going. And since coming to Celtic in January, it really boosted me. And I think people could tell the difference from me at Norwich than to when I was at Celtic, that self-confidence. So I think it's really important, yeah.
Why do you think that is? What is it about this club that gives you that self-confidence?
Yeah, just like I said, the connection I had with everyone, you know, not just the players and staff, the fans make a big difference. You know, I probably didn't have the best of treatment at Norwich with the fans, didn't have that connection, and it does make a difference. You know, you probably feel that small bit of added pressure going onto a pitch, and then coming here, you know, they gave me the freedom, they gave me everything, so I want to give back as much to them, and unfortunately, I did in that 5-month period, so yeah, it's huge.
How much do you think you can improve as a player here at Celtic?
A lot, I think. Obviously, the last couple of months working with Brendan has been amazing, and seeing what he can do and seeing what he's done previously with other players. And for me, looking at that, I think I can develop so much. You know, I know what I'm capable of, and it's now time to put it all together and do the best I can, work hard. You know, I know Brendan's got great interest in me, and it's just us sticking together now and pushing on.
Callum McGregor had said a couple of weeks ago that you were still in the group chat over the summer. Were you getting loads of questions from the rest of the team asking about what was happening?
Yeah, I was back and forth with a couple of them, but like I said, I didn't really know what was going on myself. I kind of actually found out off Sky Sports that I got done, but yeah, I was still in the group chat, and we kept in touch.
That's quite an odd thing, I imagine, just watching it unfold on the TV. Where were you at the time that you saw it?
It was just in my house, and my mum rang me saying that it's done. So yeah, like I said, I told my agents just do what you need to do, and about an hour after, they rang me saying it's agreed, and I told them I've already seen it on TV. So yeah, look, I'm just delighted to be here now and get going.
Did you have a lot of dialogue with Brendan over the summer on your lengthy holiday? Because he's a big fan of you, that was quite clear from the get-go, and you're a big fan of him.
Yeah, look, we spoke briefly. Everyone knew where I wanted to be, so we spoke briefly, but it was nothing major. It was just staying in touch and how I was keeping, and obviously stay fit, and whatever happens, and just little things, just staying in touch. Yeah.
And on the price tag, I know you say it doesn't put pressure on you, but have you taken a moment to look and say, actually, you know what, I'm one of the most expensive players in Celtic's history now?
Not really. It doesn't really affect me. I only found out just a while ago that was the case. It's the price tag. I'm here to play football, and regardless of how much a player is, I still have the same goal and same drive to do the best I can for this club and be as successful as we can.
Very cool, calm and collected there from Adam Ida. We're going to talk athletics now, and Rory has been catching up with Cork's Phil Healy to discuss her Olympic Games experience, the relay team's amazing performances inspiring the next generation, what's next for her, and much more.
Delighted to be joined on the Big Red Bench now by Irish Olympian Phil Healy. Phil, how are you?
I'm all good. Delighted to be home. It's been a few weeks since we've been over. Like, we were away for 4 weeks probably in total, so it's good to be back. It's been a very exciting time. But yeah, I'm glad to be home now.
I'd imagine it's a fairly kind of intense bubble over in Paris for a couple of weeks.
100%. So we went on camp first to an hour away from Paris in a place called Fontainebleau, and it was such a great setup. Like, we had the hotel there just for us. The track was 5 minutes walk away. The gym was only 10 minutes away. So it really was a very relaxed environment, and it was just athletics. So yeah, we had such a great setup, and then we moved into the Olympic Village, I suppose, around the 29th of July. So I was there for 2 full weeks in the village before we started competing, and even like I warmed up with the mixed relay. I was a sub for the mixed relay, so it was a long wait, I suppose, before I actually got to run, but we had plenty of training and stuff in between, so we were kept busy. Mm-hmm. And obviously the Irish were performing the whole ways through, so across the various sports, so we had all of them to watch.
Yeah, did you get to see much of them in person? Were you just watching on TV in the Olympic Village, or how did it work?
Just in the village, unfortunately, because I suppose, like, just with the travelling and stuff to different events, and COVID also was rampant in the village, so we did have to be careful at the same time. So I actually only got to the stadium to see the mixed relay, to see Rashida semi-final, and then when we got to compete ourselves. So no, I didn't get to see any other events, which is a little disappointing, but I was there to do a job. So with athletics being at the end, I suppose it's hard that way, whereas other sports like the rugby, the boxing, the rowers, they got to see so many different events after being finished at the first half of the games.
Yeah, when you're watching Rashida then, like in the semi-final, you're watching that as a fan, obviously. You're able to take, I suppose, the enormity of the event, the size of the crowd and the atmosphere, just standing there, sitting there in the stands.
Yeah, it's absolutely crazy. And like, Rashida is our national treasure and our hero. Like, so seeing Rashida and what she can actually do, like, that was just phenomenal. And like, the stadium was actually insane. I think it has a capacity of about 80,000, and it was full every single time, morning session, evening session. And the amount of Irish, honestly, that was there would like blow your mind. Like, when we would walk out, the rowers, the amount of flags, the amount of green, white and orange in the stadium, like, was crazy. Like, I know Rashida said one day in her interview, like, it felt like we were in Morton Stadium in Dublin. And honestly, you would swear that we were there. And even when we ran the final, like, it was on a whole other level compared to the heat the previous day. But like, even if I rewind back to Tokyo Olympics, like, that was a very COVID restricted Olympics and there wasn't a sinner in the stand. So to go out and have 80,000 plus in the stadium, just phenomenal.
And can you hear that when you're on the track then competing? Can you really feel the atmosphere when you're in the track, or are you kind of completely in the zone?
No, absolutely. And like, even when you're with the relay and you're, I suppose Sophie runs leg one, so she's being introduced to the crowd and we're just waiting at the side, and you can just, you feel that and it just like lifts you up that extra bit. But yeah, once you get that baton in your hand, you can hear the crowd absolutely roaring, and that brings you home. So yeah, it was a very, very special time. And I suppose with the games being so close to home, we can call Paris home basically, because the next game is going to be in LA, the one after that is in Australia, so that's the closest we're ever going to get to a home game for a long while again. So like, it was a credit to the amount of Irish travelling support across all sports, but even like the support then that we felt from back home was crazy. Like, the nation apparently stopped on Saturday night, like, and there was GA games paused and they weren't even at half time and stuff like that. It was mental.
Yeah, did you see that video of the Oliver Plunkett's game getting paused so they could watch the relay?
I did, and I was talking to Aisling O'Reilly from Off the Ball then at the homecoming, and she was saying that she was playing a game and that was paused also, and she said there was other games up around her that were paused, which was, it was crazy. It was crazy, and to see that it had that much impact and that much support, and even like RTE released the number of viewers, and like, it's the third most watched event of the Olympics, and that's just on live television, and then you have all the RTE player and different devices connected from that on top of that then too. So it's madness, absolute madness.
Yeah, the country went to Olympics crazy, and I think you kind of touched on a number of factors there. The fact that, like, so close to home, it's the right time for us to be watching it from the time difference point of view. And you compare that to Tokyo 3 years ago, as you mentioned, the COVID restrictions and it being so far away. But this, as you said, fell right in our doorstep. And the Irish public, Phil, just really grabbed onto this Irish team from beginning to end, from every single sport that they were competing in.
Absolutely, and it's crazy to see the amount of actual support that we have, and like, I suppose new fans to the sport. Like, for me, even like, I wouldn't know the ins and outs of certain sports, and you get to learn that with the Olympic Games, and like, people stop and pause and they take time off just to watch the Olympics. It's actually crazy, and just the amount of inspiration it gives to younger kids, I suppose, because like, I remember watching the Olympics when I was younger, and I suppose we get that exposure to so many different sports in such a short time frame. So it's absolutely super to see, and the support was just, it was just phenomenal, and it gave everybody a lift. And obviously it was the most successful games for Team Ireland with the amount of medals that they did bring home. So yeah, to be a part of that was just super.
Yeah, my daughter is 8, she's nearly 9, so this is the first Olympics that she really kind of grabbed on. So when I told her I was talking to an Olympian this evening, she got starstruck and wide-eyed, because she watched your relays, she had watched all the performances from Team Ireland. And that's what it's all about, Phil, I suppose. I mean, like, I know you guys are competing out there, but you're also inspiring the next generation as well.
Absolutely. And like, I remember as a kid, like, when I was going to GA matches and like Cork matches and different things like that, you always remember the players. And I suppose sometimes we forget that we are in that position now, and so many people look up to us. And like, for me, I don't see myself as any different to anybody else. I just go out and do my job and that's it. But so many people have taken inspiration from it, and it's so important, I suppose, to give back to to the kids and the younger generation too, because we were, once upon a time, I was that age as well. So yeah, it's just mental. And hopefully, like that, like even on after our success at the European Championships back in June, the amount of young kids that wanted to take up athletics and relay specifically, like that was just unbelievable to see. So hopefully the Olympics has inspired a lot more kids to take up different sports and give it a go, because if you don't give it a go, you're not going to know if you like it or if you don't.
Exactly, that's the key message, like just get out there and try it, try every different athletics event, try every different sport and see what sticks, and who knows, in 12 years time you could be competing at an Olympic Games.
Absolutely, because like I will go around to a lot of schools as well with the Team Ireland Dare to Believe program, and I suppose it's so important to let kids know like it's not about winning. And I suppose sometimes kids are too focused on the winning mentality, and if it's not, if you don't win, it's seen as a failure. And I think it's so important to educate kids that it's about having fun and making friends. And like when I rewind back, I definitely wasn't a superstar when I was younger. Like I was definitely a late developer to the sport. It was probably 18, 19 before I actually realized my potential, and someone that wasn't winning along the way. So like, absolutely, if you don't give it a go, you're not going to, as I said, you're not going to know if you like it or not. But I think we definitely need to move away from that winning mentality and make it more about enjoyment and participation and making friends along the way.
Absolutely, very, very well said. We're a few days out now from that 4x400 meter final. Have you watched it back yet? Have you processed it yet? What are your thoughts on it?
No, I haven't watched it back. And I suppose, like, to be honest, we didn't expect to come fourth. When we had a relay meeting earlier before the race, and we were asked what were our goals, and I suppose our goal was to break the national record, which was 3:22.8, and we said 3:21. We ended up running 3:19, and we were aiming for top six. So I suppose we performed collectively like out of our skin. Like to take 3 seconds off the national record was absolutely phenomenal. It's the first time an Irish female relay has ever got to an Olympic final, so we were making history with that alone. And then I suppose to be so close to a medal, it was absolutely heartbreaking. To run 3:19.9, it's the quickest time. Like, it was a time quick enough to get a silver medal in every other Olympics, bar 1988. And it created history that it was a time that never won a medal in an Olympics. So even if you see the top three times, it was an American record, it was a Dutch record, it was a British record. So everybody had to run a national record to get a medal, which was it's phenomenal. So it's definitely a race that is going to go down in history. And I suppose, yeah, it definitely is bittersweet, but to come fourth in an Olympic Games is a crazy, crazy achievement. And like to get to an Olympic Games is so hard. Like the dedication, the sacrifice, the work that goes in, like it's an event that only comes around every 4 years. Obviously this year, or this time, it was a 3-year cycle with the delay in 2021, but it all comes down to the day. Like everything has to go right on the day, and that's a big, I suppose, gamble when it's an event that only happens once every 4 years. And it happened for us on the day, and to come away fourth, the amount of people that have come forth at the Olympics that are Irish are like very minimal, so to be a part of that is phenomenal. And especially track and field, because track and field is such a hard sport with the amount of nations that are competing and involved. So yeah, it's a performance we'll certainly be forever proud of. It hasn't properly sunk in, I suppose, yet. It's definitely a bit surreal, but it's a special team to be a part of, and I was delighted to go out there and run with the girls.
Yeah, exactly. Talk to us about your teammates. You seem like a very, very close bunch indeed. And that was kind of evident after the race as well, the way that you were all kind of, I suppose, consoling each other and trying to G each other up after coming forth.
Absolutely. And like that team has definitely developed a lot over the last few years, and the dynamic as well. And like we get on so, so well. And like even we rewind to European Championships in 2022, that's only 2 years ago, that team ran the exact same four of us ran 3:26, and now we have a national record of 3:19. And even just together as a bond, we have developed and got so much closer in the last 2 years. And as I said, it's a special team to be a part of. But yes, four of us went out and ran on Saturday, but we had Kelly McCrory from Donegal who ran the heats with us on Friday. And without Kelly, we wouldn't have qualified for the final. And then there was two other subs back in warm-up as well who play such an important role and are there to step in at any point if they need to. And like that squad is constantly changing, and it's there's great depth in 400 metre sprinting in Ireland now. So yeah, seven of us travelled, but there's so many more people that could be on that squad, and like that goes year to year, which is great to see. But yeah, it's a special team to be a part of, as I said, and I was delighted to be a part of it once again.
Yeah, as you mentioned, Kelly there, she ran so well in the semi-finals. Is it hard for her then to like not be part of the final, or does she accept that this is part of being part of a team, I suppose?
Absolutely, you have to accept it. And Kelly, like, she was super, and like, it was her Olympic debut, and I suppose going out on an Olympic debut, qualifying the team for a final, you can't ask for anything more, and she performed phenomenally. And like, we knew Rashida would possibly be coming in. Obviously, Rashida had to run her final first to see what way her body was, but Kelly was there to step in at any point in case any of us weren't okay in the warm-up. And even when we rewind back to European Championships in June, Kelly was on the team and the subs were warming up, and then Kelly had an injury that took her out of the team and she couldn't run on the day. So like the roles had reversed. So like it was great to see now Kelly back on the team, and she was ready and waiting. But no, Kelly fully supported the team and was there for us throughout the whole thing.
And there's a lot of, I suppose, focus and attention on Rashida as well, especially coming into the games. I'd imagine being part of a team kind of takes her away from that a little bit. And I suppose she has that little bubble of her teammates to kind of protect her from it almost.
Absolutely. And Rashida's phenomenal. Like what she has done, and she's only 21 years old, to be the first female sprint Olympic finalist for Ireland, like, is just a phenomenal achievement at her age. And I know Rashida doesn't put age down to it. She was like, she's there to compete and she's there to win medals, and her talent shows that she can do that with what she's achieved and what is yet to come for her in her career. But there is so much pressure on her, and I think it definitely is hard at times because she's so well known and she has the pressure of the nation. But I suppose she knows what she's capable of. Everybody knows what she's capable of, and she went out there to win a medal and obviously was disappointed to come away with fourth, but what she will achieve in the years to come is just unlimited.
Yeah, I just can't wait to see what's in the future for Rashida. Talk to us about, I suppose, about the homecoming on Monday. I mean, like, there was a fantastic turnout, and it just showed you, I suppose, the love of the Irish people that they had for this Irish team, and such a huge crowd. It must have been almost humbling, I suppose, to see that crowd coming on Monday.
It was crazy. And like when we heard there was a homecoming at lunchtime on a Monday, we were like, where are they going? People actually have worked on a Monday. But there was over 25,000 people that turned up, and like we were absolutely blown away. And even once we landed in Dublin airport, there was so many people. The airport was like at a standstill, and like even we were obviously coming into arrivals, people were going off and they were waving from their departure gates and stuff like that. So it was crazy to see. And then as we made the journey in from the airport to O'Connell Street, there was people lined the footpaths, they had flags waving. It actually was just crazy to come home and see the support. And I got the train home then to Cork on my like planning to sleep and catch up on sleep, because I was surviving off a total of 4 hours and 2 days. And I tell you, I didn't get a minute's sleep on that train. But there was so many amazing people that I met there, and they had made the journey from the likes of Kerry, Limerick, Tipperary and Cork, especially for that homecoming, and to take, I suppose, to make that effort and take that time out of their day to come up all the ways to Dublin to be there to welcome home the Irish team was just crazy. There was such a buzz, the amount of kids, the amount of families, like people of all ages. It was just crazy to see, and it made it very special, and it was surreal for us.
Yeah, and you're going to have your own special homecoming now tomorrow. We're recording this on Wednesday night. You've got your own special homecoming in Ballineen. That's going to be an incredible occasion.
Yeah, so I heard there's one tomorrow night. So yeah, that'll definitely be, I suppose, exciting. And I suppose give back again to the local support, because the local support has been super. And like, I remember when I came home from Tokyo in 2021, they were the same. They lined the streets. And yeah, it's great to see the local people, because they obviously have followed your journey the whole ways up. And I'm excited for that tomorrow night.
Yeah, it'll be an incredible occasion. Just as I suppose, as we were talking, I suppose, getting the next generation involved, I suppose, Phil, like the facilities in Cork, I suppose, has been a kind of bit of an issue since the track in the Marlick has been closed. The MTU track was closed for a time. It's good to see that back up and running now. But to have only two 400 metre tracks in Cork, I suppose, it begs the question that, like, should there be more facilities in Cork, and should there be more 400 metre tracks built to help encourage kids into athletics?
Absolutely, because I think the Cork, when the Mardai closed, it cater for 8,000 athletes, I think, in Cork. And then when there's no track, that's absolutely crazy. And for me, yes, I'm based between Cork and Waterford, but it forced me to stay in Waterford all the time. And I had a balance between training in Cork and training in Waterford, and then that was taken away from me. So I suppose if I just even look at myself personally, if I was based in Cork and then the Mardai closed and we had no track, I would have had to move county. So I obviously was lucky to have a house in either, but 100%, like, it's unbelievable to have CIT back open, or MTU, and having the facility there. But Cork is such a big catchment area, to only have one 400 metre track is madness as well. And obviously Bandon Athletic Club, my own club, are building theirs, and obviously the cost of an athletics track is crazy as well. So they've done so much to get the funding, and hopefully we can get more government funding as well to finish that out, so that we do have even a track in the West Cork region to serve that catchment area, because it's so important. And it's not just for athletics. There's so many sports that can utilise a track, because even like you see in the likes of the Mardai, you have GA clubs and different things that are coming in prior to it closing. So like, it's not just catering for athletics. There's so many sports that use it, and we definitely need more facilities in Cork. And even if you look at, obviously the sun isn't shining all the time, and indoor tracks are only in Athlone and Dublin, so that takes a lot of travel as well. So we definitely need more down in the Cork region and Munster in general.
Yeah, it'd be fantastic to see. Phil, what's next for you now? I imagine you're going to take a little bit of time off after the Olympics, I would think, would you?
Yes, definitely. So I definitely have a few weeks off now just to relax, unwind. It has been a long 12 months of training, and I suppose it peaks in when you come to the Olympics. So, yeah, it's time to recharge the battery. So I'll spend some time at home and relax before getting back into it again in about 5 weeks.
Yeah. Are people asking about the next Olympics already?
Yes, they are, and I definitely don't think I'll make it to 2028. So yeah, even after this year, like, I didn't know if I would retire, but I think coming fourth, I don't have, I suppose, the urge to stop right now, and I know what we can achieve, I suppose, more with the relay team. So I'll definitely probably give it one more year at least, but I will be rather old by the time 2028 comes around.
Now, you're still only a young one yet, Phil.
Yeah.
Phil, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Congratulations on Paris, and thanks for talking to us today.
Super. Thanks a million.
Amazing stuff there from Phil Healy. She was just fantastic at the Olympic Games, and so great to see that Cork representation on that level as well. Before I finish up, I've got one more bit of post-match reaction for you from Dermot Carthy, who has been speaking to Seamus Hayes, Carbery Rangers manager. His side finished their Premier SFC Group 2 game against Clonakilty, which ended on a scoreline of 12 points to 1 goal and 9 points. Let's hear what he had to say.
Seamus, when you're 6 points down and things don't seem to be going your way, what does it say about the resilience of this group, that you, not only did you draw the game, but you could have and possibly should have won it right at the death?
Yeah, look, I mean, the character of this team, it can never be questioned, really, you know. This is my second year in charge, and, you know, they went to the well twice last year against Castlehaven and Clan, and, you know, we were very disappointed with Michaels, but I knew when we went 6 points down, it was a blow. We were all a little bit deflated, but, like, you know, we looked into the bench, we made some changes, and to a man, every one of them stood up and was counted, you know. So, like, I don't think the character of the team can ever be questioned. We don't certainly question it anyway. Their resilience and resolve is exemplary, and look, I just said there to Tommy that, you know, we've 35 fillers trained 3 times collectively and another 2 or 3 times on their own. So, like, every time we look into the bench, we've full of options, you know. And it's a pleasure to be involved with them. And I certainly wouldn't be questioning their character or their resolve or their resilience ever anyway. Sure.
Yeah, that resilience, when things weren't going necessarily your way in the league, there was still resilience there. There was still a belief and there was still a hunger. And when you had to dig deep today and pull out a result, you did it. And that should give you plenty of momentum, irrespective of the fact that you're playing Castlehaven in the last group game. What you did today in the final quarter is something really to build on.
Yeah, and you're looking for big players to step up, you know. I thought Jono was awesome. Dara Hayes came in, you know, at half time, and I thought he was absolutely exceptional for a fellow who was very disappointed not to be starting. Caelan Scannell came in, was very disappointed not to be starting. Patter was injured, you know, and, like, he had a bad ankle injury, but he came on there, scored a great point as well, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, these fellas are coming in, and, like, they could have shied away from it, sure. You know, they could have shied away from that battle, but they decided they were going to take it on. And I'm incredibly proud, to be honest.
Excellent stuff. We'll see you next day.
Thank you, Jono.
Cheers, bye. And apologies for the ringing noise in the back of that audio there. That is everything I've got time for this evening, folks. Thanks, as always, for tuning in. It has been Sarah McKenzie Foley here with you for the last hour. In case you're wondering about that FAI Cup game between Kerry and Bohemians, it went all the way down to penalties, and it was Bohemians who came out on top, scoring 4 penalties to Kerry's 2. So that was a very, very tight game and went down right to the wire in the end. But as I say, that's everything from me for this Sunday edition of the Big Red Bench. But don't go anywhere, because Green on Red with Mags Blackburn is coming up next.
The Big Red Bench with Bord Gáis Energy, proud sponsors of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship.
Cork's good times, Red FM.
We're back on Monday morning with your post-electric picnic cuddles. We'll give you a chance to win an incredible amount of money on the cash machine. The pop quiz is back. Vic will have your VIPs, and it's the return of the Monday Punday game.
Red FM Breakfast. With Now. Join in and experience must-watch sport, films, and the latest entertainment on Now.
Weekdays from 6 a.m. Red FM. Cork's good times.
The Big Red Bench. On Cork's good times.
Red FM. The Big Red Bench.
With Bord Gáis Energy. Proud sponsors of the GAA Hurling All-Ireland Senior Championship.
Cork's good times. Red FM.
At Bruce College, we are offering weekly grinds in an extensive range of subjects for 3rd, 5th and 6th years from expert teachers. Exclusive study notes, option to study on-site and or online, insights and practical exam strategies with the freedom to rewatch classes for the full year. Book your place now. Click on brucecollege.ie.